Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So a reading today from Canto 10, Chapter 2, Prayers by the Demigods, Text 10. Archishyanti manushyastvam. Sarvakam avareshvarim. Dupopahara palibhi. Sarvakam avarapradam. Archishyanti manushyastvam. Sarvakam avareshvarim. Dupo pahara balibi. Sarvakam avara pradam. Archishyanti manushyastvam. Sarvakam avareshvarim. Dupo pahara balibi. Sarvakam avara pradam. Archishyanti, will worship. Manushya, human society. Tvam, unto you. Sarvakama vara ishvarim. Because you are the best of the demigods who can fulfill all material desires. Dupa, by incense. Upahara, by presentations. Balibi, by different types of worship through sacrifice. Pradam, one can bestow. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. By sacrifices of animals, ordinary beings will worship you gorgeously with various paraphernalia, because you are supreme in fulfilling the material desires of everyone. Of course, this is speaking to Yogamaya, Mahamaya. Purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7.20, Kamaistaistaya Hritigyana Prapadyantanya Devata, those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto demigods. Therefore, the word manushya, meaning human being, here refers to one who does not know the actual goal of life. Such a person wants to enjoy the material world by taking birth in a highly elevated family with the benefits of education, beauty, and immense wealth, which in this material world are desirable. One who has forgotten the real aim of life may worship Goddess Durga, Maya Shakti, under various names for different purposes and in different places. As there are many holy places for the worship of Krishna, there are also many holy places in India for the worship of Durga Devi or Maya Devi, who took birth as the daughter of Yashoda. After cheating Kamsa, Maya Devi dispersed herself to various places, especially in Vindhyachala, to accept regular worship from ordinary men. A human being should actually be interested in understanding Atma Tattva, the truth of Atma, the spirit soul, and Paramatma, the supreme soul. Those who are interested in Atma Tattva worship the supreme personality of Godhead, Yasmin Vigyate Sarva Evam Vigyatam Bhavanti. This edition doesn't mention it. Is it in here? Is it from Munduka Upanishad? Yeah, okay, it's not in the books. Mundaka Upanishad. The verse Prabhupada uses several times. I didn't find an exact translation, but it means basically something like, if you know the supreme, you know everything. You understand the spiritual, you also understand the material. This verse, Yasmin Vigyate Sarvam Evam Vigyatam Bhavanti. However, as explained in the next verse of this chapter, those who cannot understand Atma Tattva, Apashyatam Atma Tattvam, worship Yogamaya in her different features. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Shrotavyadini Rajendra Nirnam Shanti Sahasrasa Apashyatam Atma Tattvam Griheshu Grihamedisam Nam. Those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of ultimate truth, have many subject matters for hearing in human society, O Emperor. Those who are interested in remaining in this material world and are not interested in spiritual salvation have many duties. But for one who is interested in spiritual salvation, the only duty is to surrender fully unto Krishna. Sarva dharma prachaja mamekam sharanam vraja. Such a person is not interested in material enjoyment. Om jnana timrandisha gina jana salakaya chakshur numitamina tasmai shri gurave namaha pancha kalpa tribhyascha kripa sindhubhyascha patitano pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So Krishna has ordered Yogamaya to transfer the child, the seventh child, to Rohini, and herself to enter the womb of Yashoda and be born from Mother Yashoda. And of course, we understand as the story goes on that Kamsa tries to kill her, but of course he's unsuccessful in that. And then it's explained how, it's not very loud, is it? Well, maybe it's kind of, okay, that might help. Okay, technical adjustments here. All right. So Yogamaya, of course, expands herself as Mahamaya. Is that better? Okay. Expands as Mahamaya or Durga into this material world. And, of course, it's explained here, and Krishna is instructing Mahamaya, and also not only instructing, but also explaining what her role will be. How she enters into this material world and accepts the worship of materialistic persons. In the next verse, which elaborates a little bit more on it, I don't want to go into too much about the worship of Durga or anything, but it's mentioned that Krishna and Maya, or Yogamaya, appear simultaneously. Therefore, both are worshipped. It's almost like there's this rivalry between the worshippers of Krishna and the worshippers of Durga, Shiva, and others. So there's the Shaktis and the Bhaktis. And that's kind of been there, you know, since for time immemorial, practically speaking. And it's mentioned specifically that they appeared together. Yogamaya appeared, then Krishna appeared. So both are there. And why are both there? Because there's different desires of the living entities. There are those who have more desires for material enjoyment and those for more purely spiritual benediction. So the devotees of Durga or Shiva generally want some material reward. They may be pious and they maybe perform some religious activities, some jagya or some worship, but the goal is for material things. Where the worshippers of Krishna, the Vaishnavas, have a very different approach. Their concern is for, Prabhupada says, liberation of this material world, but through the process of devotional service. So not to enjoy the material world, but to get out of this material world, and ultimately, even beyond the idea of liberation, to worship Krishna, to engage in devotional service. So Prabhupada talked about this many times, how devotees, you know, do not approach Krishna for material things. That's not our goal. Our goal of worship is to please the Lord, not for the Lord necessarily to please us. Prabhupada gave the example of how even in the Christian prayers, they would often say, give us, one of the very famous Christian, you know, prayers, of course, is, give us this day our daily bread. So Prabhupada made the point about that particular line where he said that we should understand that God is not our order supplier. It's not that God's purpose here to, I need bread, I need food, I need so many material things, therefore you come and give it to us. No, that is not the position of God, and it's not the, well, it's one of the positions of God, but it's not the position that devotees worship God in. There's a nice purport in Bhagavad Gita 132. Prabhupada says, materially, everyone wants to satisfy his senses, and he wants God to be the order supplier for such satisfaction. The Lord will satisfy the senses of the living entity as much as they deserve, but not to the extent that they may covet. I thought that was an interesting line. You know, the difference between desire and deserve, probably, that distinction. We may have so many desires, we may covet so many things, but we actually will get what we deserve. You know? But when one takes the opposite way, namely when one tries to satisfy the senses of Govinda without desiring to satisfy one's own senses, then by the grace of Govinda, all desires of the living entity are satisfied. So again, the difference between the two different approaches and the difference in results between the two different approaches. If we try to approach God as our order supplier or God to satisfy our material desires and material senses, we may or may not get that, depending upon our karma or what result that we have accumulated through our pious and impious works. If we try to simply satisfy the senses and desires of Krishna, then the living entity is completely satisfied, because that is our constitutional position. That is the real position, the real duty, the real dharma, the sanatana dharma of every living entity, to be eternal servant of Krishna, and our enjoyment comes through giving Krishna enjoyment. It's not that there's not enjoyment. Just as there's material enjoyment for the materialist, there is great spiritual enjoyment for the devotee. But it comes secondarily. First we satisfy Krishna, then Krishna satisfies his devotees. So we see there's quite a difference between these Shaktis and Bhaktas, that often the ones who are worshiping Shiva or worshiping Durga for material benediction, they actually will get that. It is not that this doesn't work or that it's something false. It is real. It is something that one can attain. If one performs, of course, it's very difficult in Kali Yuga, but at least theoretically, if one would perform proper worship of Durga or Shiva, one could gain great benediction. And at the same time, we see that devotees are often very poor. If we remember the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, we didn't see a lot of material opulence. Rather, we had extreme renunciation, you know, living under a tree, you know, with maybe one... You know, maybe have a second set of cloth to wash. I don't even know if they even had that. Probably not. You know, so, you know, so we might wonder, well, you know, Krishna is the most wealthy. He is the creator and the maintainer of the entire universe. Why are devotees so often poor? And we even find that we struggle a lot. You know, we struggle to try to, you know, just get a little bit of money to do anything practically. Where the worshippers of Lord Shiva and Durga often seem to be very wealthy. So, naturally, this came up in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and this very question was asked by Shukadeva Goswami from Purikit Maharaj. He said, why is it? Why is it? This seems to be a contradiction. Krishna is the most wealthy, and his followers are very poor. Lord Shiva is very renounced. You know, he lives, you know, like a renounced mendicant, has ashes smeared on him, but his worshippers are very wealthy. And so, the question was there, and then a story was related of a similar conversation between Krishna and Yudhishthira. And this is all discussed in the 88th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. And so there, one night, one verse, Krishna says, Yudhishthira, 10.88.8, the personality of Godhead said, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. So many of us have experienced this. But fortunately, for me at least, a lot of my family members didn't all abandon me. They're very kind. But, you know, we see this. The Krishna will sometimes take away material things, take away wealth, take away any opulences that a devotee has. But it's very important to understand this verse says, it doesn't say, if someone displeases me, I will take everything away from them. You know, it's not a punishment. Krishna says, if I favor someone, I take everything away. So that's kind of the irony here. But it's actually considered to be Krishna's favor, Krishna's blessings, Krishna's love for his devotees that he may take material things away from them. Why? Obviously to increase their spiritual understanding, their spiritual love, and spiritual dependency upon Krishna. Because when material things are all gone, what do we have left? There's always Krishna. Krishna's always there. Krishna's there from the beginning, the middle, the end. He is the absolute. Our relationship with Krishna is eternally there. And that is the thing, that sometimes, because we are forgetful living entities in this material world, we need to be reminded of. So Krishna sometimes makes arrangements in such a way that we have to surrender, and then we have to depend upon him again. So this being forced to surrender means giving up our material attachments. And that's not always so easy. Sometimes that's difficult for devotees. It's difficult for all of us to give up material things, to give up material desires, to give up those attachments. They're very deeply rooted within the heart. Those anartas that are there within the heart for many, many years, lifetimes, kalpas, millennium, I mean, for a long, long time that we've been in this material world. So as we experience this process of becoming detached from the material world, sometimes it's a little painful. But the devotee is very careful to try to understand his position in relationship with Krishna and never to blame Krishna. So in other words, if I find myself some loss materially, I understand that's probably a gain spiritually. So two points of this is, first of all, that the devotee always accepts that Krishna is personally taking care of him. Everything that is arranged for me by Krishna is for my ultimate benefit. And the second point is that means that we take personal responsibility for our own circumstances, and we take personal responsibility for our devotional service. In other words, whatever situation I found myself in, somehow or another, it's my responsibility, either in this lifetime or my last lifetime or some past lifetime. You know, somehow I have put myself in this situation. It is not that, you know, this is some punishment of the Lord necessarily. No, I take responsibility for that. And I take responsibility for how I respond to those circumstances. Because we can't always change our circumstances. Sometimes those circumstances are thrust upon us and we don't even understand why. But we take responsibility for how we respond. And that means responding through the process of surrendering to Krishna. That we increase our devotional service, not decrease. That's, of course, a more advanced devotee. A more advanced devotee understands some difficulties there. That means I have to be more Krishna conscious. I have to surrender more. And we do accept that fact that, you know, that Krishna will take care of us. He will look out for us. Of course, this mood was very nicely exemplified by Lord Brahma in his very famous prayers in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. And, of course, one that we all know in verse number 8, the Tate Nukampam Nusamsu Samikshamano verse. Lord Brahma says, "My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart and body, words and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim." So this is a very, very wonderful mood of the devotee that our first acharya, the head of our sampradaya, Lord Brahma, instructs us in this way, that one sometimes has to suffer the reactions of one's past activities, one's past deeds. But it says one patiently suffers that, one understands this is temporary. This is the material. This is while I'm in the material world, there may be some pain, some pleasure that's there in the material world. But, as Lord Brahma says, what do? I offer respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body. So the response is to simply take shelter of Krishna at every moment. In Vishma Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on that verse, he says, the devotee thinks the Lord certainly knows what is best for me, even if I don't know. Karma and time have no effect on a devotee. So this is Krishna's personal arrangement for me. In other words, Vishwanath is saying, this isn't ordinary karma. This isn't just the reactions of material nature. This is Krishna's personal care for me. And he says, out of his mercy, Krishna sometimes gives me happiness and sometimes gives me distress, considering how to engage me in his service. So again, this is the meditation of the devotee, the understanding, the realization of the devotee, that whatever happens within this material world, there may be suffering, there may be distress, simply due to the interactions of the modes of nature, due to past karma perhaps, due to just being in this material world. You know, just the fact that being in this material world means there's going to be some happiness and there's going to be some distress, and it can't really be avoided. We saw Srila Prabhupada experience many instances of distress, being gored by a bull, having heart attacks on the Jaladuta on his way, you know, over to America. You know, these things will happen at any stage of devotional service. But what we saw with Srila Prabhupada is what was his response. His determination simply became stronger. Setbacks or seeming setbacks simply became an impetus to surrender to Krishna. Hey, Krishna, I don't know what your plan is here. I just have to surrender to you. And Prabhupada expressed that through some of his different prayers, you know, when those incidents happened. So we have these wonderful examples of the spiritual master, the guru, the great acharyas, like Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Brahma, Srila Prabhupada, that show us the mood of the devotee and how to handle material distress, not to become absorbed in wanting to make independent arrangements for material satisfaction, to become independently wealthy, or to have great sense gratification, but simply to accept what Krishna has given, whether it be happiness or distress, take responsibility for that, and take responsibility for one's devotional service, and see this as a way to learn and to grow and to understand that I must surrender to Krishna at every moment and take shelter of him. Of course, that's sometimes easier said than done. It's not always so easy to surrender to Krishna. We are in a neophyte, beginning stage of Krishna consciousness. So sometimes to accept renunciation is difficult, or to accept poverty. These things can be hard for the living entity, even if they're sincerely trying to engage in Krishna consciousness. You know, of course, in fact, in the Madhurya Kadambini, Bhishma Chakravarti Thakur talks about this, and talks about this principle of anishtita, unsteady devotional service. And this is a very important for me to mention, first because it's a very, very important point, and secondly, Madan Mohan Prabhu lent me that book, and I want to make sure he knows that I'd actually read it. So, you know, anyway, see if you're going to get it back, though. You know. Anyway, very wonderful little book by Vishwanath. And he talks about this unsteady devotional service. That's a whole other class, but there's six types of unsteady devotional service. Things like we make vows and then we can't really follow them. I say, I'm going to chant 16 rounds every day before I eat. And then, well, okay, I can't do it today. Or, you know, I want to renounce, but I don't want to renounce. You know, I get on the mental plane. Should I become more renounced? Should I do this? Sometimes people have this, should I get married? Should I not get married? Should I take sannyas? You know, in other words, he gives all these different examples that we get very, you know, back and forth. The flickering mind is there, you know, about do we progress more in devotional service or do we kind of slide back? And this is all on the, all part of the stage of Bhajana Kriya. Stage where we've begun our devotional service and we're beginning to hear and chant, but we're not yet at the platform of nishtha or steadiness. So we're in this unsteady devotional service stage. And I certainly can see myself in that stage and see how the mind presents so many opportunities for us to be a little bit unsteady. But of course, the idea is that we continue steadily regardless of whether the mind is steady or not. And I remember as a new devotee so many years ago, it's hard to remember, but The devotees used to say that a lot. Always talk about the mind and how to ignore the mind and don't pay attention to your mind. And 40 years later, I still have to not pay attention to my mind and ignore the mind. And so, not so much progress. But at least we have more understanding of what the mind is and why we have to ignore the mind and what are the different traps and pitfalls by listening to the mind, so that we can become more steady in our Krishna consciousness. And of course, this is addressed, this idea of that we are not necessarily always at the highest platform of devotional service, by the Srimad Bhagavatam in the, where is it? Oh, second canto, third verse, verse 10. Akama sarvakamo va mokshakamo daradi tivrena bhakti yogena vijeta purusham param. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desires, without any material desires, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. So again, the indication for us is whatever stage of devotional service we're at, whether we have so many material desires, sarva-kama, whether we're wanting liberation, moksha-kama, or whether we're free from all desires, the same path is given for everyone, bhakti yoga, devotional service. And this this really relates to our verse today, where we're talking about, you know, the followers of Lord Shiva or the followers of Durga and those who are seeking material benediction. So our understanding and our instruction from the Srimad Bhagavatam is even if one has material desires, we don't perform mixed devotional service. We don't perform devotional service with jnana or with karma or with yoga. We continue the process of pure devotional service regardless of whether there are material desires or not. And in that Srimad Bhagavatam verse, the very last line of Srila Prabhupada's purport is a very nice explanation of this. Prabhupada says, this implies that bhakti yoga may be perfectly administered without any mixture of karma and jnana. As the unmixed sun rays is very forceful and is therefore called tivra, in this verse tivrena is there, which means the rays of the sun, which are very powerful, and also the sun is very purifying. So just like those powerful and purifying rays of the sun are there, so that forceful bhakti yoga can be there, similarly, unmixed bhakti yoga of hearing, chanting, etc., may be performed by one and all, regardless of inner motive. So I think those last few words are very important, regardless of inner motive. So it means that if one has material desires, one doesn't say, well, I'll do devotional service, but since I still have some material desires, I'll worship, you know, Kali Durga on the side also. No, I mean, it sounds, you know, I mean, that could be a conclusion, but, you know, you all know better because you've been trained in Krishna consciousness, that we simply worship Krishna. We perform this process of bhakti yoga, and we're performing pure devotional service under the pure guidance of the spiritual master and the acharyas. Therefore, even if one has material desire, by performing this pure process, we become purified. And that's the process, very simply. That we simply continue and we perform the process of sadhana. Sometimes people get very mental about these things. They think, well, I'm not doing it very well, so maybe I should just not do it. No, we always continue devotional service under all circumstances. Like I've heard people say, well, I'm not chanting my rounds very well, I'm not hearing them well, so I probably just shouldn't even chant them. No, chant 16 rounds. You'll hear some of them, you know. I mean, just by virtue of, you know, 25,000 names, you're going to hear a few of them. And so you're going to be benefited, you know. And as you hear a few of them, you become more purified, and you'll become more attentive, and you'll hear more and more, and your hearing will increase. And soon you'll be chanting very nice rounds and hearing them, because that's the natural position of the soul. We naturally become enlivened by the process of hearing and chanting, and hearing and chanting leads to more hearing and chanting. As we always say, the means and the end are the same in bhakti yoga. In the beginning, we hear and chant to become purified so that we can chant and hear in a purified state. So the hearing and chanting simply gets more and more refined, more advanced, our realization becomes deeper, but the same processes are there. And therefore, the Bhagavatam is telling us, over and over again, simply take up the process of devotional service of bhakti yoga, regardless of desire, regardless of motive, regardless of our inner state of purification or lack of purification. By simply taking up this process, we'll eventually reach that level that we are looking for. a pure devotional service, or at least deepening our understanding and our appreciation of devotional service and our relationship with Lord Krishna. Okay. So the verse again, which may not sound like it has much to do with class, but anyway. No, by sacrifice of animals, ordinary human beings will worship you gorgeously with various paraphernalia because you are supreme in fulfilling the material desires of everyone. So Krishna gives this opportunity for all living entities. You want material things? Here's a process. We have Maya Devi for you. If you want pure devotional service, Krishna comes and appears and offers himself to us. Okay. I'll end there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So are there any questions or comments? Take in the back. Rangavati.
Yes, I was in Detroit, not Detroit, I joined in Detroit, and so Evanston, Illinois is quite near there, and so the devotees drove down.
There's a little bit of distortion. I mean, say a little louder or slower.
Okay, better?
I hope so.
So I was in Evanston, Illinois, and there was a Ratha Yatra there, and Srila Prabhupada came, and there was a darshan, which I was a new devotee, so I was invited by Jagadish Prabhu and my parents also. So you had said earlier in your class how the Christians, Prabhupada said, Christians are praying, give us our daily bread. And of course, I was raised a Christian, a Catholic, and so are my parents. So in the darshan, Prabhupada was talking about that. You know, why are the Christians praying? Give us our daily bread. God is already giving. No need to pray. So my father raised his hand, and he said, well, they're not just praying for bread. They're praying for so many things. And Prabhupada just roared at him, what do you know? Be quiet, basically. And I was pretty shocked. You know, here was my material father and my spiritual father having this, you know, debate, and he just chopped him down instantly. Of course, there was no contest. But as you were saying that, I was realizing that that prayer does contain that idea of give us our bread, but most people are praying for much, much more than bread. And is there anywhere in the Shastras, I don't ever remember seeing degrees of prayer like there's devotional service in the mode of ignorance and passion and goodness, there's charity in the mode of ignorance, passion, and goodness. But I don't remember reading where there's prayers, what types of prayers are in those modes. And then how it's such a gradual process, because I know some devotees who prayed, Krishna, please take everything away from me. Yeah, I just want your service. And then after having that prayer answered, they became cured of that prayer. It's very frightening to pray that prayer. So it seems like there's degrees or stages of prayer.
I think it's a very good point, talking about different stages of the depth of our understanding of prayer. I don't remember specifically if there is discussion of prayer in the different modes of nature. If somebody knows some reference to that, you could help us out with that. I don't know specifically, but of course prayer is very connected with desire. When you think about it, what is a prayer? Prayer is we're expressing our desires, and of course that is discussed, our different desires, material desires and spiritual desires is there. I also wanted to add one thing, though. Prabhupada did say I think it was a lecture or a darshan, Prabhupada said, better to pray to God for your daily bread. He said 1,000 times better to pray to God for your daily bread than not to pray at all. So that does indicate, you know, that there certainly is some benefit. In other words, at least approach Krishna somehow. At least remember God, at least approach God, you know, that he's part, in other words, and acknowledge. Because it is an acknowledgement that everything is coming from God. You know, so there is the beginning of devotion. You know, even though we might say that's a materialistic prayer, there is the beginning of devotion, at least there's acknowledgement. You know, and Prabhupada at other times did recognize that. And of course, as far as your specific experience, you know, who can fathom the mind of Srila Prabhupada, and, you know, he always knew how to deal with every situation very uniquely. And I always find that interesting, because sometimes people will say, well, Prabhupada said this here and he said this there. Well, yeah, because they were different circumstances and they were different people. And Prabhupada had that spiritual realization, insight, to be able to deal with every situation somewhat different, and how to apply Krishna consciousness appropriately to the person, place, and time. You know, but, yeah, we probably, our prayers become more advanced as our realization becomes more advanced, unless we're just being very artificial. And, of course, we all have that tendency, too. You know, I'll act as though I'm on this very high platform, or I'll try to. But, you know, it's not always just an act, either. I don't want to minimize that, because sometimes it doesn't hurt to try to act on a high platform. I mean, in other words, just don't become puffed up and try to present to other people that you're on that platform. In other words, we want to be honest, we want to be humble. But at the same time, if we try to act according to our highest understanding, then there's a chance that we will come to that level. You know, so in other words, you know, just as Prabhupada said when he gave his Brahmin initiation, it's not like now we're qualified Brahmins. He says now you have an opportunity to become a Brahma, you know. So in other words, we're always sort of in that process of becoming, a process of trying to achieve perfection and purity, you know. So in one sense, striving for a higher position, trying to understand that higher position is helpful to us. But we also sometimes also have to remember what is the reality and how do I act according to my own realization. So on this thing of prayer, I've thought about this at times. You know, sometimes I think, well, do I really want to pray Krishna take everything away from me? Am I really ready for that? So what I usually pray for is something kind of in the middle, which is, you know, Krishna, please help me with whatever you want. You know, whatever your desire is, whatever your understanding, you know what I need, please help me to in that situation. In other words, I don't know if I'm quite ready to say, you know, take everything away from me, but at the same time, I also don't want to pray to Krishna for material things. You know, so sometimes I think at our stage, our best prayer is simply to remember Krishna, to acknowledge Krishna, to ask for his help and for his guidance in whatever circumstance we find ourselves in. You know, and that is a form of surrender. In other words, we surrender to whatever situation Krishna puts us in. You know. Mahatma Prabhu?
Yeah. I think it's also nice to pray to overcome the fear of Krishna taking everything. Once heard a Christian say, he said, don't pray to God for tasks equal to your strength, but pray for strength equal to your tasks. Hmm. So I had an interesting experience. I did a workshop on prayer many years ago, and kind of addresses your question. And we had devotees write down what they pray for, and you could kind of see the modes of nature you're in by looking at your prayers. You know, kind of answering your question. You just look at what you're praying for. It reflects a lot about yourself, your faith, particularly a lot about faith. And it's an interesting exercise. But I like the concept of, this is what I'm afraid of, Krishna, please help me overcome that fear. Or help me understand, why am I afraid of surrendering? And why am I so happy not to surrender? And so comfortable not surrendering? These are all attitudes.
Yeah. It's very good point. And Prabhupada did always emphasize that. In other words, like sometimes Prabhupada would say, well, pray sincerely. We're saying, well, what if I'm not sincere? Then pray for sincerity. It's kind of like always that take it one back. In other words, we never get let off the hook. It's always, you know, always pray, always chant, always be, surrendering and seeking Krishna's help from whatever point we're at. And I think Mahatma helped bring that out. Whatever point we're at, let's look at that and pray for help with that particular position in our life. You know, and that is a good point. If I don't feel surrendered, then pray for the strength to surrender. Yeah. Prabhu? Go ahead.
Another angle of that, too, that I try to remember to apply is praying, not just depending that Krishna will do everything, but praying, give me the intelligence, how I can actually act for you. So I'm taking responsibility by praying for some intelligence. So I find that's it's a nice thing. I was also thinking of a story Radhanath Swami spoke about. He went to a community of Shivaite community, and they were walking amongst the community, and they thought, wow, this place is so together and it's so peaceful. And this is when he was coming from New Vrindavan. They said, everything's chaotic at New Vrindavan. Why is it like this? So they actually went to the guru there, who they had a discussion, and the guru said, you may think this place is very nice and together and peaceful. He said, we worship Shiva, but you worship Krishna. So I know that your New Vrindavan, your communities, they're always in chaos, because Krishna is trying to take everything away from you and send you to Goloka. But we're actually worshiping Shiva. This is different. This is why this place looks different, feels different. So they were amazed. He was actually, you know, speaking like this, like they're worshiping on a different level.
That is interesting. Having that realization that they, you know, they may be gaining a certain amount, but not gaining the highest perfection. I know. Interesting. I think Krishna Gopal, did you have a?
So the other side of that coin is that Krishna says, for those who worship me with devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, I carry to them what they lack and preserve what they have. So Prabhupada's explaining one purport here that actually if you're engaged in devotional service, everything will come. But it's coming for Krishna. It's not coming for you or for me or for someone else. So here he says that the Lord is not meant for us to struggle for existence, but that's because we're engaged in serving Krishna. So it's not necessarily that we are aspiring to become just take everything away. Yeah, take everything away, but use everything in Krishna's service. As Prabhupada always said, utility is a principle. So we use things for Krishna.
Very good. And Prabhupada even gave that example in his own life. Once he said, you know, that he was meant to be very wealthy, but then Krishna took everything away from him. His business failed. He said, but now I've been given everything. I've been given so much facility and temples and thousands of disciples. In other words, for spiritual purposes, you're right. Krishna can give us anything. You know, it's not that, you know, we're necessarily forced to, you know, huddle in poverty, right, you know, for the rest of our life. But, you know, but Krishna can give us everything. And the difference is between material and spiritual. You know, we may not be interested in so many material things, but for spiritual purposes of serving Krishna, so much facility can be there. I was just thinking when you were saying that also, and that was, I didn't emphasize it so much, but in the last sentence of this one purport I read in Bhagavad Gita 132, Prabhupada said, when one takes the opposite way, namely when one tries to satisfy the senses of Govinda without desiring to satisfy one's own senses, then by the grace of Govinda, all desires of the living entity are satisfied. So, yeah, so it's not that we will not be satisfied. It's not that we will not be happy. We will be happy. Krishna will take care of us, and Krishna will satisfy the real needs, the real desires, which are the spiritual desires of the living entity. Okay, we have time for probably one more? All right. Rupa-san. Well, maybe two if they're short. Go ahead.
I had a question too. Are there any specific prayers in the Bhagavatam that a devotee is praying for love of God? You see different prayers for protection, for remembrance, or for. But I was wondering if there is any specific prayer like that by any devotee.
Do you just pray for pure love of God?
Yeah.
I'm sure there are. I remember them, but I'm going blank as far as directly thinking of a specific. Anyone think of a specific prayer? Well, there you go. Hare Krishna. What is it? Yeah, the prayers by Queen Kunti are very much in the mood of pure devotional service, not praying for anything. Yeah, that's a good example. Thank you. That's a good example.
I just want to say a good example. I was in New York, and there's one pujari. I guess he's been there for many, many years. So I usually make garlands in the morning, So one day he came down running from the altar, and he said, "I have to tell you something." And I said, "Okay." He said, "You know, when I was 20, 25 years from Brazil," he said, "I used to work so hard, you know, I used to work so hard, and I wanted a stereo, and I wanted good clothes, and I wanted everything. So every paycheck, I had to divide it up and pay everything, and always in anxiety." And he said, "Now, I live in the temple, I have everything I want, you know, a good place to live, good service, I'm very happy. And I'm now working, and everything I ever wanted in life is provided. I want to be in New York, I want everything," just like Prabhupada was saying, he had all this stuff. He said, it took me, I guess he's 60, he said, "It took me 40 years to realize that Krishna actually provides for everything." And I thought it was really good. He was so happy that he had the realization, he had to tell someone. It was good.
That's very nice. Of course, once he's spiritually surrendered, then everything was provided. Then everything is there. Yeah. Okay, we should end class now. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.